6-3-4-1-2.
Mills Radio Adventure Theater. Welcome. I'm Tom Bosley. There's a world of adventure, a world of excitement, surprise, and drama. And this strange and fascinating world does not exist on some distant planet in a remote and faraway universe. It's a world you can reach right here. It's the wonderful world of radio. The wonderful world of your very own imagination. Explore it. Discover it with us today aboard a Greek slave ship.
Hylas! Hylas! It's time!
Numa, I'm frightened.
Do you want to be a galley slave forever?
But we'll all be killed.
Who says we'll be killed? We have a chance.
I don't know.
We'll kill the god first.
I'm with you.
When he comes by again, trip him with your chain.
Our adventure story, The Boy Who Would Be a Sailor, was adapted from a Rudyard Kipling story, especially for the General Mills Radio Adventure Theater by Sam Dan, and stars Kevin McCarthy. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Sometimes my plans are all wet.
Life is so short, eternity so long. Is it possible that all we ever get is this one brief opportunity? If you don't know the answer, you're in good company. This question also puzzled a man who was one of the world's greatest writers of adventure stories, Mr. Rudyard Kipling. And because he was a writer, anytime anything ever puzzled him, he wrote a story about it. And this is the story of how he happened to write this story. Meet Mr. Rudyard Kipling himself.
Well, now, this took place along about the beginning of 1915. I happened to be doing some war work for the government. It was supposed to be confidential, and we were warned that London was filled with enemy agents. But I didn't pay too much attention to it until one day.
Come in. Oh, Mr. Kipling. Won't you have a chair?
Thank you, Sir Arthur.
What may I do for you?
Well, I was told to see you because you are the head of security for our section.
Yes, quite
the reason
right.
That I'm here is because, well, I'm being followed.
Followed?
Yes, sir.
Followed? Mm? Why on earth should anyone want to follow you, Mr. Kipling?
Well, I haven't foggiest. A young man, dark hair, trench coat.
Hmm. Hmm? Sounds like an enemy agent.
He evidently thinks I have some important information.
Are you positive he's following you, Mr.
Yes,
Kipling?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. These past 2 days, wherever I go. As a matter of fact, if you look through the window, Sir Arthur, you'll see him.
What's that?
Through the window, Sir Arthur. Across the street at the corner, leaning against the lamppost.
Well, yes. Yes, quite so. Well, we'll nab the beggar.
And with remarkable speed for a gentleman of his years, Sir Arthur reached across his desk for the telephone, and within a few moments, a couple of policemen had the young man standing before us.
What's your name?
Charles Mears.
Charles Mears, indeed. A likely tale. Karl von Meerhaubenhoven or some such. You're a spy.
A spy? Oh, no, sir.
Oh, yes. You're an agent of the Imperial German Navy.
No, sir.
You're a German naval officer. You see, Mr. Kipling, there's no mistaking the breed. I can tell by the way he walks, stands, holds his head. Yes, he's with German naval intelligence, all right.
Ah. What will they do with him?
Shoot him, I suppose.
Oh, no, you can't shoot me. I'm not a spy.
Fellow's a German to the marrow of his bones. All right, officer. Take him away.
No! Let go of me! You won't hang me!
Hold on to him!
Yeah.
Stop him! Oh. Stop him! Don't let him get to the window!
Stop him! Yeah. You there! Yeah. Hold on!
Don't fire! Don't fire, Sir Arthur! You'll hit someone on the street!
He got away! Well, we'll find him. We'll scour the city. He won't escape. Have you a pistol, Mr. Kipling?
Yes.
Yeah? Where is it?
Where is it? It's at home.
Home? Fine place for it. I advise you to keep it about you at all times.
Surely.
And at night, sleep with it under your pillow.
Well, Sir Arthur, I...
What is it? Speak up.
I don't sleep with a pillow.
Mr. Kipling, I must remind you, England expects every man to do his duty.
Now, I suppose I should tell you about the job I was doing for the War Ministry. I served on a council that recommended reading matter for the members of the armed forces. And yet, I was being followed by a desperate young man who either could not or would not give an account of himself, and who, at this very moment, was being hunted down as a spy. Now, for the rest of the day, I thought about it, and finally, I decided to go to bed. And even though I was exhausted, sleep would not come easily. I tossed and I turned for what seemed hours. And then, just as I was falling off into sleep, it seemed that I heard the floorboards creak. Yes, the way they do when someone is walking, slowly and carefully. I sat up quickly, and with one hand, I picked up my pistol. With the other, I turned on the electrics.
Don't you...
I won't if you won't move.
Oh, I'm standing very still, sir.
How did you get in here?
Well, there was a window unlatched around the back, and I just sneaked in.
And why have you come here? Speak up.
Well, if you don't mind my saying, sir, you seem a bit nervous with that pistol. I do wish you'd put it away.
No, not until you tell me what you're after. As far as I'm concerned, you're a member of the German Naval Intelligence.
Oh, no, sir.
Then who are you?
Charlie Mears.
Charlie Mears. Can you prove it?
Well, you could ask my father, Benjamin Mears. Big Ben Mears, the greengrocer in Great Titchfield Street.
Well, why didn't you say so earlier today?
Well, I...
You could have cleared up this whole business. All we had to do was notify your father.
I know that.
Well, then why didn't you do it?
Well, in that case, my father would have to know why, and I couldn't tell him I was following you, sir.
Why not? Was it for some dishonorable purpose?
Well, my father might think so.
Is that so?
Well, sir, while he doesn't think poetry is exactly dishonorable...
Poetry? What does poetry have to do with this?
Well, you are a poet. I think the best poet in England.
Well, flattery is exactly the wine to turn a poet's head.
And my father's dead set against this poetry foolishness, as he calls it. He says I should spend more time working in a shop.
Well, your average greengrocer is usually happier than your average poet. And richer, too.
But I'm like you. I'm not your average poet. I wanted to speak with you, but I kept losing my nerve.
Really?
I thought it would be easy to say, Mr. Kipling, here's my poem, one of the very best, but... I was afraid.
Of what?
Well, suppose you wouldn't like it. Suppose you'd say it wasn't any good. That would mean...
Yes? That would mean...
Well, it would mean my father's right. He's been right all along, and so please...
Don't reach into your pocket like that.
Oh, well, it's only a bit of paper with my poem on it. Don't point that pistol at me. It's making me nervous. Almost as nervous as you are. Let me read it to you, sir.
No poet should ever be bold enough to read a poem to a man who is pointing a pistol at him.
Oh, please listen, Mr. Kipling, and tell me what you think, huh? Oh, gallant was our galley. From her...
Excuse me. Our what?
A galley. A galley was an ancient ship that was moved through the water by oars, sir.
Yes, I know what a galley is.
Oh, well then, continue.
Have you written a poem about a galley?
Oh, yes, sir. The second line reads...
Why?
Why?
Yes, why have you chosen to write a poem about a galley?
Well, because...
Here you are. For the sake of argument, I'm willing to believe that you are not a German spy, but the son of a greengrocer on Great Titchfield Street. Now, what do you know about an ancient galley?
Oh, well, sir...
What kind of a galley is it?
A Roman galley.
And what would you know about a Roman galley or Roman galley slaves?
Well, practically none of the slaves were Romans.
They weren't?
Oh, no, sir. Many were Gauls captured in battle. Now, on this ship, there were Scythians, Phoenicians, Greeks, and Syrians, who were taken prisoner by the Emperor Vespasian.
Well... You seem to have studied this period quite thoroughly.
Studied it? Well, no, sir. I'm afraid I never did. I don't have that much schooling.
You are telling me about these ancient peoples. How would you know that the slaves on a Roman galley weren't usually Romans?
Well, I just know. That's all. I mean, Everybody knows that.
Now, I didn't know that. Where did you read about all this?
I never read about it.
Well, then, how do you know?
Like I say, Mr. Kipling, I just know, that's all. But you haven't heard enough of my poem to tell me what you think.
Well, my first impression would be to say to a young man, write about the things you know, but...
But I do know all about a Roman galley. You should see how the ocean spurts through the oar holes. And the men row, sitting up to their knees in water.
They do.
And there's a bench running between and above the two lines of oars. And an overseer with a whip walks up and down and makes the men row harder. And there's a rope running overhead. And it's looped to the upper deck. Now, do you know what that's for?
Oh, I didn't even know it existed.
Well, it's for the overseer to catch hold of when the ship rolls in bad weather.
Are you saying that you've never read about this?
Oh, no, sir. Let me read you the part about my hero. He's chained to his oar, and
Wait. How is he chained to his oar?
Well, he's got an iron band around his middle, and it's fixed to the bench he sits on. See?
No.
Well, there's a kind of handcuff on his left wrist, which chains him to the oar.
Iron?
Yeah, oh, yes, sir, but it's not like the iron you see around today. It's kind of rough. Anyhow, he's on the lower deck where the worst slaves are sent. It's dark, full of water. You have to imagine how the sunlight kind of squeezes through the space between the oar handle and the oar hold itself. It's a tiny shaft of sunlight, always dancing and jumping. And he keeps his eyes glued to it, because it's the only light he ever sees.
All right, let's hold on. Right here. You must tell me how you know about this Roman galley.
But I told you, Mr. Kipling, I just know.
Well, when did you first know about it?
When? Well, it seems to me odd. I always knew about it.
You must admit, we have a rather remarkable young man here. At first, it appeared he was a German spy. And who knows? That hasn't really been settled. Now he tells at great length and in minute detail about the galleys and galley slaves of ancient Rome. And to know some of the things he mentions, well, you just had to be there. Was he there? Is it possible? Well, anything's possible on Adventure Theater. I'll be back with Act Two shortly. The General Mills Radio Adventure Theater will return shortly.
They're magically delicious.
Yeah, yeah.
Life, as a poet once said, goes on forever. But does that mean our own lives, or life in general? Who can tell? Now, way back during the time of the First World War, Mr. Rudyard Kipling was talking to a young man who is, A, 2,000 years old, B, an example of reincarnation, if indeed there is such a thing, C, a remarkable young liar, or D, all of these.
The galley was a trireme. It had three banks of oars, you see. The longest oars were on the top deck, and each was manned by four slaves. Mm-hmm. And then the middle deck oars each had three slaves, and the bottom deck oars had two.
Indeed. And what did these slaves eat?
Oh, I get sick when I think of it. Rotten figs, black beans, and sour wine. It was practically vinegar. It was in a skin bag, and it was passed around from slave to slave. And because of that wine, we were able to revolt.
We?
Well, that's what the poem's about. The Galley Slaves Revolt, led by Numa.
Numa?
Yes, he's the hero. Numa, a Celt from the island of Britain. It all began because he couldn't drink the wine.
Why not?
Well, it made him sick. He just spilled his share, and unnoticed. After a while, where it spilled on the oar handle, the wood became rotten.
Mm.
It splintered. And that's when the idea for the revolt first formed in my mind. Now, read it for yourself. It's all there. Read it. Lega! Etai!
Lega?
It could be a corrupt form of Latin, a command to read. The kind of Latin that Celtic prisoners would pick up from their Roman masters, into which they would give their own pronunciation. Lega Aetae. This was a forgotten dialect of a long dead language. How did he know it? He thrust the paper into my hand. Suddenly there was a feverish look in his eyes. He sank into a chair, mumbling a single word.
Revolota. Revolota.
Revolota.
And then he seemed to fall asleep, or into a trance. I couldn't tell which. I looked at the sheet of paper he had thrust into my hand, and I began to read.
This is the day we shall break our chains. This is the day we shall end our pains. Never again shall we feel the whip. This is the day we shall capture the ship.
Well, it wasn't really very good poetry, but there was something about it. You could feel the movement of the ship, the pounding of the waves, the creaking of the timbers. You could hear the thumping of the quartermaster's drum as he set the insistent, punishing pace for the oarsmen. You could hear the savage crack of the taskmaster's whips. You could hear him shout. You could hear the groans of the desperate galley slaves. Feel the blinding stab of pain from the taskmaster's lash. The cruel chafing of the rough iron chains. And then suddenly you were in the midst of it. You were inside the heart, the mind, the being of a Celtic galley slave named Numa. One of two oarsmen chained to a sweep on the lowest, darkest deck of the ship. Numa, who would lead the revolt of the galley slaves.
Hellas! Yes! Yes, Numa.
It's time.
Oh, Numa.
It's time.
It's hopeless. How can we revolt?
I told you. If we all stand up together, we can pull the benches free from the deck.
But, Numa.
The oar shackles are all almost loose now.
We'll be killed.
Quickly, instead of slowly the way we're being killed now.
But, Numa, while there's life, there's hope.
Hope for what?
Something, anything. Perhaps.
Perhaps what?
Perhaps. The ship will be captured.
By whom? Nothing that sails the sea can hope to capture a Roman ship of war.
But what have we to fight with? On the upper deck are soldiers. They have swords and spears.
Tell us. We already talked about it. It's late at night. All of them are asleep. Half of them are drunk.
There's one thing to talk about. It's another thing to do it.
Tell us. It well may be that while there's life, there's hope. But this is not life.
Yes. Yes. You're right, Numa.
Pass the word forward. Ready.
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 The whipper. He's making his way back. I can hear him.
He's not going to hit me again. He's never going to hit me again.
Oh! Oh!
Now!
Suddenly, the poem ended. The water rushing in through a hole in the bottom of the hull. But what happened? What happened? What happened then, Charlie?
Well, they drowned.
Drowned?
Well, the hull was rotten. It was a scandal. You see, the Vescula Tauris, who were supposed to repair the ship...
The who?
Well, I think they were called the Vescula Tauris, something like that. Anyhow, that's the way it sounded.
Well, it might have sounded that way to a Celt who didn't speak Latin. The first syllable, ves, might be for vessel.
Anyhow, they were cheated. The ship wasn't seaworthy.
And the water came in and the ship went down and everyone drowned.
Yes. Yes.
You were standing there and there was no escape.
The water rose very quickly. I'm talking about the level of the water. But somehow when it reached the level of my eyes... It seemed to pause. It was like a banjo string that was torn very tight, and you could hear a hum that grew louder and louder. You knew it was going to burst, and suddenly it did.
Charlie, you'd better go home.
Well, I've got so much more poetry. It's all in my head. It has to come out.
Well, why don't you write it?
Oh, where? I can't write it. Hell, my father simply won't have it.
Well, why don't you write it here?
Here?
I have a big house. You can have a place all to yourself.
Mr. Kipling, I wouldn't want to impose, sir.
Why? We're two of a trade, you and I.
Are you saying I'm a poet?
Well, I'm saying that either you have the most fantastic imagination or...
Or what, sir?
Or... never mind. It's late. You'd better get some rest.
Oh, but I'm not tired, sir.
I am. I had a long day, and I'm exhausted just reading about the galley slaves on that ship.
I've heard about you, Mr. Kipling. I've heard of you.
Mr. Mears.
It's Sergeant Mears.
Sergeant Mears.
I was Colonel Sergeant, H Company of the Mavericks.
The Mavericks?
Yes, sir. Stationed 12 years in India I was. I read all the poems you wrote, sir.
Ah, but I was led to believe that you didn't care for poetry.
Ah, who led you to believe that?
Well, your son, Charlie.
Oh, well, sir, I'm opposed to poems when they're wrote by those who don't know what's what. But you, sir, you know, yes, sir, you know.
Now, I want to ask you about
every
Charlie.
Every word true. Now, like you take that Tommy Atkins. I walks into a public house to get a pint of beer. The public in the option says, we sell no redcoats here.
Has your son ever studied about ancient
Rome? The girls behind the bar, they laughed and giggled fit to die. I outs into the street again. To myself, says I.
Yes, yes, and where does he come by his fantastic knowledge
Tommy
of,
this and
of
Tommy
ancient
that,
Rome?
And chuck him out, the brute. But it's savior of his country when the guns begin to shoot.
Why would your son write a poem about Roman galley slaves?
Well, I wouldn't know the answer to that, sir. I don't know nothing about those people.
Are there any books in the house about ancient Rome?
Oh, no, sir.
What about school?
Well, sir, he never was one for schooling. He's more of a dreamy-eyed kind. Wants to be a poet. Oh, he'll starve to death, he will. That's why I watch him in the shop, for his own good.
Well, I think he has the making of a poet.
You do?
Hmm?
I mean, you mean he could write a poem like the one you did about Gunga Din?
No, I'm only saying, Mr. Mears, that he has a great imagination.
Ooh.
And you have no idea how or where your son could have learned about Roman galleys and slaves.
Why, sir, you just said it. He's got a great imagination.
Imagination. I know about imagination, but it only carries you so far. You can see the ship, but not the grain in the wood. Where does it all come from? I went back home after a rather long and difficult day with Sir Arthur, who, to this day, believes Charlie Mears is a spy, to find Charlie hard at work with pen and paper.
Oh, it's a new poem, Mr. Kipling. It seems I just can't stop writing.
I'll stop long enough for tea.
Oh, no, sir. I don't have time.
But the first lesson every poet must learn is never miss a meal. Have you decided to finish the poem about the Roman galley slave?
What Roman galley slave?
Now, the poem you showed me last night.
Well, which poem was
the
that?
The one you called The Revolt of the Roman Galley Slaves.
Well, why would I write a poem about Roman galley slaves?
Well, you...
Well, I mean, what do I know about Roman galley slaves?
Wait. Where is it? There it is on the table. Here, this piece of paper. You see, The Revolt of the Roman Galley Slaves. You mean to say you didn't write this?
Well, no, I don't remember writing that.
Isn't this your handwriting?
Well, yes, but I'm positive I never wrote it. I never saw this before.
You're writing another poem, you say?
Yes, sir.
Huh? What's it about?
It's about Canute the Killer.
Canute the Killer?
Well, he was a Viking pirate.
What do you know about Vikings?
Oh, well, I know everything about Vikings.
Now what shall I say? Here we go again? All right, here we go again. But the problem is where? Well, one thing about Charlie Mears, at least he's consistent. He sticks with sailors. And you just stick with me, because I'll be back here with Act Three shortly. Right now. The General Mills Radio Adventure Theater will return shortly. Rudyard Kipling wrote a poem which went, "Home is the sailor, home from the sea." Well, it was really a eulogy. It meant the sailor had found his final resting place. And so, when you come home that way, you can only come home once. Doesn't that stand to reason? Well, this time, Mr. Kipling is telling us about another sailor. And this one, well, quite frankly, it's hard to tell at this point if he's coming or going.
And you don't remember writing this poem about a Roman galley slave named Numa?
No, Mr. Kipling.
He wasn't a Roman. He was a Celt.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't know anything about him.
He led a revolt and was drowned when the ship sank.
I can't remember writing anything like that.
Well, how do you account for the fact that it's in your handwriting?
Well, I can account for it.
I see.
What do you see, Mr. Kipling?
Nothing, no. Now, this poem is about Canute the Killer.
Yeah, well, not exactly.
Well, it is or it isn't.
Well, it's about Thorsten Olafsson.
Thorsten Olafsson?
Mm-hmm.
Who was he?
Well, he was the son of Olaf the Minstrel, and he ran away to sail with Canute the Killer, who sailed in the wake of Leif Erikson, and Leif the Lucky.
What you've written here is a poem about a boy named Thorsten Olafsson and his singing sword.
Ah, yes, sir, the singing sword. For Thorsten said to his father, Olaf the Minstrel, "Thy voice sings for thee, my sword shall sing for me." And he ran to the sea to join the ship of Canute the Killer. And long did they range the wide sea road.
Uh-huh. And what happened to Thorsten Olafsson and Canute the Killer?
Well, Leif the Lucky did speak of a land to the far west beyond the setting sun. Ultima Thule. A land where gold glittered in the streams and pearls and rubies were like pebbles on the beach.
What land was this?
Oh, Vinland or Markland or... Today, I think it's some part of America.
And this was the land of great riches?
The falsehoods.
Ah.
Leif told those things to Canute the Killer to get him out of the way. And it was far. Oh, so far. It was a cold, hard, bitter place filled with wild animals and skraelings.
Skraelings?
Well, you would call them Indians. We call them skraelings because in Norse, the word skrae means scream. And they filled the air with the most blood-curdling battle cries.
Did you fight them off?
Oh, yes. And as often as they would be driven off, they'd return again, more fierce than ever.
Then why did you stay?
Yeah, we couldn't stay and we could not go. The long voyage had ruined the boat bottom. We had to cut trees for timber and burn wood for tar and pitch. And always... always the screaming attacks of the skraelings.
But you did escape.
Yes. But the night before, Canute the Killer motioned me to come to him. He would speak to me alone. Now read how it was written. How I, Thorsten, son of Olaf the Minstrel, Thorsten of the Singing Sword, spoke with Canute the Killer.
And once again, that faraway look came into his eyes. Once again. I couldn't tell if he were asleep or in a daze. I took the paper from his hands and began to read.
You would speak with me, Canute?
Shh. No one else must know. Keep quiet counsel, Thorsten Olafsson. The ship is ready.
I know.
We sail on the morning tide. To have come this distance, to have endured these hardships and to sail home empty-handed...
But what's to be done?
I have been told the chief of the Skraelings has a treasure.
What sort of treasure?
A treasure of gold and diamonds.
Gold? Diamonds?
Everything we came for.
You say you were told by whom?
I caught a Skraeling skulking in the woods last night. Before I killed him, I made him speak. He spoke readily enough.
But how do you know we spoke the truth?
I can read the truth in a man's eyes. Therefore, let us, you and I, go to the tent of the chief and take his treasure.
Yeah, well, that's dangerous.
Is Thorsten Olafsson a coward?
No man calls me a coward.
And further, he has a daughter. A beautiful daughter.
A bargain. The treasure for you, the daughter for me.
A bargain. This is the biggest tent. It must be that of the chief.
How shall we enter?
With your sword. Cut a hole in the side. Quiet. Good. So, now, inside, quickly.
I'll carry her back.
Leave her. You can't carry her and fight at the same time.
I can do anything. I am Thorsten Olafsson.
Hurry. Hurry, Thorsten. The ship is waiting.
There is no hurry now. The Skraelings did not dare to follow us into camp. See? Our men come to greet us. Ah, you men of the sea. Hey, you see what I have done? A Skraeling princess. I have stolen her from her father's tent. With my singing sword, I have done this.
Put her down.
I shall carry her into the ship.
Put her down. She belongs to me.
She was taken with my sword.
I am captain of the ship.
We made a bargain. The treasure for you, the girl for me.
Fool. The girl is the treasure. She is a treasure worth gold and diamonds. We shall sell her for a queen's ransom.
She belongs to me.
I said put her down.
I shall put her down only to draw my sword. You want the girl, Canute? Come, take her.
You will have to fight all of us.
Wake up.
Hmm? Hmm?
Huh? Wake up, wake up. What happened to Thorsten?
Who's Thorsten?
Thorsten Olafsson and the singing sword.
I don't know.
You just wrote this poem about him. Here, read.
I wrote this?
Of course, of course.
Well, how could I write a thing like this all about Vikings? What do I know about...
It's in your handwriting, see? How do you account for it?
Well, Mr. Kipling, I can't account for it.
It was a mystery. He wrote more. He wrote poems about Diego da Silva, a mariner with Columbus who died on the voyage, about Dick Maltby, a gunner aboard the British ship Serapis, which was sunk by the American captain John Paul Jones. And the strange thing, each poem came to an abrupt end because the hero died. And after he had written the poem, set it down on paper, Charlie not only forgot what he had written, but even forgot that he had written it. Actually denied it.
Why do you insist I wrote those poems?
Because you did.
Well, no, sir. I had ideas and I wanted to write poetry. I tried, but nothing would come out. So I suppose I'll never be a poet.
Now, Charlie, it would be a pity if you stopped writing.
Thank you for being so good to me, Mr. Kipling, but I must go now.
What?
Well, I don't know.
But where are you going?
I don't know, but I'll get there.
And he just walked out of the house. Was he the reincarnation of an eternal sailor? If there is reincarnation, aren't we supposed to forget our previous lifetimes? Is it possible that his forgetfulness was not complete? Only by writing it down was he able to finally remove it from his mind. I didn't know what to think. Weeks passed. And then,
I decided to visit Ben Mears at the shop.
Oh, Charlie's gone out for a bit.
Ah, what's he doing?
Oh, he's working here in the shop with me.
Mr. Mears, have there ever been sailors in your family?
Sailors?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, sir. We're all dry land sailors.
Well, we must discover where, why, how Charlie is so knowledgeable. His poems are eyewitness accounts of the greatest periods in history. He mustn't stop writing. He must continue.
Hello, Mr. Kipling.
Charlie, come in.
Well, I can only stay a minute.
Oh, sit down. Would you like something to eat or drink?
No, sir. I must go to Victoria Station and catch the Liverpool train.
Ah, you're going to Liverpool?
Oh, yes, sir. I have a job.
Huh? What kind of a job?
Well, sir, I was walking along the street just the other day when I passed the office of the Cunard Company.
The steamship lines?
Yes, sir. I went in and asked for a job.
Why?
Well, I don't know why. Something seemed to make me do it. And I said to the man I wanted a job as a sailor. And he said, well, where's your papers? And I said, I haven't any, but I knew all about sailing.
Do you know anything about it?
I think I do.
You think you do? Hmm. Have you ever been to sea?
No, sir, but it's just this feeling I have. Anyhow, he gave me the job.
Uh-huh. As what?
Ordinary seaman.
Ordinary seaman. On what?
Oh, it's on a passenger boat. A big one, too. Funny, I think about that ship, and for some reason, I feel as if I'm going home.
Ah. Well, when will I see you again, Charlie?
Well, we sail for America tomorrow. We'll be sailing back on May 8th or 9th.
Are you beginning to feel poetic, Charlie?
I think so.
Come see me as soon as you can.
Oh, I will, sir. Oh, I will.
Good luck, Charlie. Oh, by the way, what's the name of your ship?
Oh, she's the finest vessel afloat. The Lusitania.
The Cunard liner Lusitania. She was sunk at about 2 p.m. on the afternoon of May 7th, 1915, with a loss of almost 1,200 passengers and crew, one of whom was ordinary seaman Charlie Mears. I'll be back shortly. Do you hear sounds in the night which should be familiar, but you don't know why? Do you ever see the vague outlines of a face that belongs to someone, but you can't for the life of you recall who? So many things can never be explained completely or satisfactorily. Is it possible that we've lived before and that vague traces of a past life somehow linger on? Well, past, present, or future, you'll get the best of all possible worlds when you listen to us.
Welcome to the Monster Business with
Count Chocula
and Frankenberry.
Our cast included Kevin McCarthy, Jack Grimes, Bill Griffiths, and Don Scardino. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. This is Tom Bosley inviting you to return to the General Mills Radio Adventure Theater for another exciting tale you can hear through the magic of radio. The General Mills Radio Adventure Theater is recommended by NEA, the National Education Association.